Welcome to Two Dope Boys and a Podcast. I'm Michael Brooks.
I'm Big Waz.
Yeah, that's right. Big Waz coming off the bench. Two Dope Boys is a shout out from the margins. Each week we break down trends using the lens of culture to shed light on what's significant to your future and why. We got super producer Matt Leck with us. Big Waz in the chair filling in for Phil McKenzie. What's up, man?
Nothing. I would just like to say Phil always says he's happy to be here. I just want to point out that I'm fucking pissed that I had to come up here.
God
damn it.
You're angry.
Nah, just kidding. Always happy to be up here with y'all, man. Shouts to Matt.
Like an old Jew.
I came from Queens and I'm tired and it was a subway ride.
You know what? And like an old Jew, I ate a pastrami sandwich way over here. So. There you go.
That's where Waz and I, that's when we're out, man. We hit the delicatessen.
That's right.
All right, we got to get to the brand F-up of the week. And speaking of the brand F-up, you know The Handmaid's Tale is basically, it's a science fiction novel. It was written in 1985 by Margaret Atwood. And it basically tells of a kind of like futuristic, misogynist dystopia of a regime that controls women's sexuality. A lot of people have pointed out that it's not that far off from the kind of, you know, the Republican social agenda, essentially. And it's been adopted onto Hulu. And basically, this F-up is interesting because it kind of is an F-up of people involved in the project not kind of realizing what content they're actually putting out and how it's being tracked in culture. So when recently they were at a panel at the Tribeca Film Festival, this is about a week ago Friday, and they basically, in response to all this outpouring, they were like, this show, the actors that were on the panel were basically saying the show really shouldn't really be considered all that feminist. So this is Elizabeth Moss, who's one of the stars of it. She said, honestly, for me, it's not a feminist story. It's a human story because women's rights are human rights. Madeline Brewer said, I don't think this is a feminist propaganda. Another actress on the show said, I think this is a story about women and about humans. The three people hanging on the wall in the scene depicting the aftermath of the execution are all men. This affects all people. Twitter lit up. I'm going to keep quoting now from Vox. Fans called the panel bizarre and disappointing. How is a show about the subjugation of women and forced reproduction not feminist, asked Roxanne Gray, and so on and so on. You know, and then what's interesting, though, is that this actually goes right back to the author herself, where, you know, apparently people have insisted for a long time that she's really a great feminist writer. She actually doesn't really identify herself that way. It's interesting because I actually get the frustration that artists and creators have of like other people assigning meaning to them that they're not carrying. Yes. That's legit. But at the same time, the way these actors are doing it on this panel, you know, they're kind of all lives mattering it.
Sure.
And I think we're done with that. And that's where the F up is at. But anyways, your thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts about this. Initially,
cocked back, pastrami sandwich consumed. Yes. And thought.
Yes. green tea consumed as well.
Ooh, damn, dude.
Yeah, be careful out there with that green tea. Yeah, I know. It's dangerous.
It sneaks up on you.
I started mixing teas and coffees the other day. Oh, I was feeling like Future. I said that on Twitter the other day. Not many people got the joke or the reference.
I do get that. I like that.
Yeah, you know, immediately I thought about a few years back. I don't know if you guys will remember this, but Pharrell kind of got entangled in a controversy because he described himself as new black.
Right.
Quote unquote.
Oh, that's how Matt calls himself.
Right. Yeah. Matt is post black.
Yeah, Matt's
post our extinction.
Yeah.
MAGA.
Yeah. That's right.
Anyway.
Working on it.
So I thought about Pharrell and what he was basically trying to say. It's like a lot of times as a creative, as a business person, you want to be able to unburden yourself of all these things from the past that come with being a black artist or come with being a feminist artist. And you kind of want your work to be able to live within the present.
Right.
And so that it can speak on its own terms.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a fantasy land. In reality, you don't even get to be like that. But another part of what I found interesting is I think what their attempts to not ghettoize their work, and last time I was here, I believe, we talked about Drake and the Grammys.
Right.
And how Hotline Bling got ghettoized and sent to the rap music category.
Right, like ludicrous that wasn't in pop.
Right.
Right.
And a lot of times as an artist, you don't want to then do that to your own work by calling it black or right. calling it feminist. So, and the reality is a lot of people will have a hard time finding the entry point of empathy if you label a certain piece of art as feminist or if you call something a black movie.
Right.
You understand? A lot of people. And so I understand the compulsion to do that. But at the same time, you know, as Michael always says, like the stakes are kind of high right now.
And there are no sidelines.
And at the end of the day, if everybody who considers themselves aligned with the feminist movement or, you know, pro-black movement, you kind of can't hide. There is no hiding, and there's kind of no point. Everybody has to kind of be in this together. Another point that I thought was interesting was the author's assertion that she didn't want to... She didn't want to label
Margaret Atwood.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me, Margaret Atwood.
Yeah, yeah.
She didn't want to label her work feminist because it attaches it to us to strict rules and ideology.
Mm.
And I think there's something to that, especially as it pertains to feminism, because that's such an amorphous term.
Yes.
As somebody who I like to consider myself, or I think I am, a feminist.
You ain't no feminist.
There you go, Mike. You know, a lot of times I want to hear different feminist voices, and a lot of times they're conflicting.
Right.
Or even contradicting at
times.
Right. You know, so it's hard to center yourself in the conversation when there are all these different, you know, strings being pulled from different directions. It's not like pro-black where that's just defined.
Right.
Blackness is defined clearly, where it's like...
You think it is more clearly defined?
Than feminism? Hell yeah.
That's true. No, you understand? Blackness is a contested term, too.
Sure. Where, you know, you have certain people like, what's his name, Larry Elder?
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Who would say,
I
like,
contest Larry this is Elder how, existing.
Right, this is how we get to the promised land.
Right.
But he'd call himself pro-black.
Right,
but for the
most part,
we know what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's slightly more defined than feminism, I feel like, where, you know, again, when I listen to different feminist voices, a lot of times I'm hearing different and competing and conflicting ideas. So I can understand the compulsion to just be like, you know what? It's a quote-unquote universal story.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I think that we need to figure out the reality that, especially in today's world, is that there's a lot of things that are universal and they're specific at the same time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like the lens is specific and the themes are universal. That's kind of the nature of our existence.
Right.
But I think, you know, I guess on the kind of brand F up level, and this is maybe not as it's definitely not as deep, but you know, it's getting released on Hulu. It's a streaming show. It's a very self-selected audience. It comes at a particular moment where, as you said, you know, the themes and things are in mind. And I just think that even the way they did it, there's a way of saying, like, of course, it's a show about forced reproduction. Of course, that's fundamentally, you know, thematically, it's about women's rights. It's about misogyny. It's a feminist argument. It's a human story, and everybody could, you know, access it. But of course, you know, we're doing this show, and it is coming out at this time. And I don't even think you need to say anything, you know, beyond that. I don't want to put words or, you know, mandate. I think that's another problem with some of the kind of call-out culture, is all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't know what Elizabeth Moss thinks, and that's none of our jobs to say what she thinks, or let alone Margaret Atwood. But we need to be real about... And they should be smart about, you know, what ecosystem they're floating in, because this isn't a universal story in the sense of, you know, this isn't a major movie that's being released across the country that you don't want to, you know, alienate anybody from. The couple million people or couple hundred thousand or whatever it is that are going to stream this on Hulu, they're probably going to fit a certain profile.
Right. I thought it was interesting that they used the word propaganda, specifically the one
yeah, yeah,
forgetting
yeah.
who they quoted, but she was like, Yeah, this isn't some piece of feminist propaganda, because at the end of the day, that's how that word propaganda will be attached to your work by a certain element of our population.
Right.
Once you call it feminist.
Right.
Right. Once you put feminists on the front end, it's propaganda is automatically stuck to it at the end of it. So I understand the compulsion as far as business wise, but at the end of the day, who's going to be watching these shows but women who are more than likely identify themselves as feminists?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to make a quick point. One is the novel, if you Google dystopic feminist novel, this is the first thing that comes up.
Right.
And so they're not fooling anyone, right? Like, no one's going to be fooled into going to...
There is like an element of like Notes of Native Son. That's not a black book. It's a human book. What's your problem?
Yeah. And so I think...
Autobiography of Malcolm X.
I think it's sort of like... I think there is that response to feminism that people have. I also think it's sort of like my perspective on GMOs. Just put it on the label so people get used to seeing that, because that's a real part of what's going on here.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And I buy it. I agree with both of you all. We just figured it out. We just mansplained. We just
running away from femininity and feminism. Feminists.
And if you need any help figuring that out, we're happy to explain it to you. All right. We got to get to what's up.
Oh, my boy. Now it's time for the what's up portion of the program.
Dude, you gotta get the video version of Dope Boys to see that face. That was such a like, I want to show you a Honda CR-V.
Yeah, so Breitbart News, if we're calling it that.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
They've been denied permanent government credentials.
Oh, shocking.
Which means they don't get to be in the pool of people who has, you know, immediate access to Congress and also the people in the White House press pool.
Right.
They don't get to be those people. So
who rejected their bid?
It says it's a 5-person journalistic panel, and they rejected it based on the company's ties to clearly partisan sources.
Right. Okay. So somehow, but this is the same organization that, you know, cleared Fox News as an example. So Breitbart's really,
right,
really in. Real quick, let's edit this. What's the name of that thing?
Oh, no. It's the U.S. Senate Daily Press Gallery.
Okay. So the U.S. Senate Daily Press Gallery rejected Breitbart.
Which I've never heard of before today.
I follow their work avidly. But what's amazing is that, okay, number one, and we were joking about this in the prep, that you always, like, now it's always the Trump voice every time you read something.
Right.
Yeah, but you still have access. I mean, if you want access, we're giving access to a woman who has this anti-vaccine blog in Oklahoma. She said I was doing a great job and
great
that
job.
Muslims are moving here. So, I think it'll work out. But the bigger point, I mean, one hand, you could say, all right, here's a little bit of like the, you know, mainstream press starting to try to exercise a little bit of quality control.
Sure.
But at the same time, what you said earlier was, before as we were setting up, is that doesn't this only help Breitbart's brand?
It only enhances their brand as these outsiders. They're getting right at the mainstream establishment. They're anti-establishment. They're radical. They're too crazy for the White House. They're too crazy for Congress and the press corps. You know, it only serves to embolden them and their followers and the convoluted, ridiculous message that somehow the white man is being held down by the government.
Okay, well, I was up with you until after. Because I'm saying that the white man is not only held down by the government, but
right, and you know, and this kind of feels. I don't want to say petty, but it's mostly symbolic.
Right.
Right. It's like we know Breitbart's gonna freaking have access. Steve Bannon has an office in the actual White House.
Right. But I mean, I guess I guess this is covering the Senate. This has a different, you know, I think, though, the really core point about this is if we're in a zone, and this has been, like, we got to a point where all of these institutions discredited themselves so much. Politics, journalism, sure, corporations, through double dealing, through corruption, through dysfunction, through everything else, that it set the stage for a whole other level of pathology. Donald Trump, Breitbart, you know, this whole other level of incredible dysfunction to kind of take the helm. And now, you know, they're trying to reassert quality control, but they killed their credibility in the previous process. And now everything is just filtered not through, you know, at least in the Breitbart base, it's not, oh my God, what does this say about the dishonesty of the reporting that I'm relying on? Or the fact that, you know, these people are handmaidens of the White House, which is obviously the greatest political power in the country. It just says, like you said before, oh, look, these are, you know, the liberal establishment is trying to control my coverage. And so everything just kind of becomes brand confirmation in that zone. And that's why, and, you know, particularly, I mean, this is happening kind of across the board, but this has been, you know, right-wing media is the pioneer of the post-fact, post-reality space. So it's self-reinforcing. All you can do is win.
Right. All these, and like you said, all these major press publications or companies, whether it be the elite, you know, cable news companies from CNN to MSNBC to, you know, Fox News, if we're even putting them in the same category, to
establish. No one said MF-er. Where's my iced tea? You know, I've ate with Waz, and it's so weird. You know, when the first time we went out and had dinner, Waz didn't tell the waiter, he didn't say, hey, MF-er, where's my iced tea?
Right. You know, and it goes right on down to Matthew, outlets though, like the Washington Post and the New York Times, who each one of them has been caught repeatedly with their pants down.
Right.
And so with a lot of people, they don't have a leg to stand on anymore.
Right.
So Breitbart can go back to their people and be like, you really going to listen to the New York Times?
Right.
You know, Washington Post? CNN? Are you kidding me?
So what's the play then? Like, how does some of this stuff get restored? You know, I mean, because I agree. Like, all of these, through a combination of the business models failing, you know, less money in real journalism, rise of the corporate funding, rise of the right, and these places fucking up in and of themselves, like, okay, so what do we do here?
I think bad things have to happen to people. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is you have to get kicked off your healthcare. The water supply in your town has to get poisoned.
Wait, you're like, talking about voters?
The people, well, not just voters, but the people who consume the content. Right? Like, if you've been fed anti-government, anti-this, you're gonna feel that way until something bad happens to you.
I don't know, dude. People in West Virginia still voted Republican. They've been having, they had towns where the water was out. You know what I mean? They've had, you know, I think that's the other problem, though, is I think that either people are going to get, you know, either they go deeper into the conspiracy rabbit hole, or they're like just where most people are, which is that they're dispirited and gutted. You know, most people are not looking at Breitbart or Fox or Alex Jones or listening to Rush or any of that shit, just like most people are not looking at any news.
Right.
They're just trying to, you know, survive.
Right.
But I mean, I hear what you're saying about the stakes coming directly to people's doors, but I just think from a kind of press perspective,
I don't know how you kind of self-reform.
I don't see the angle on this.
They've ceded the moral high ground a long time ago. Like, it won't be the press that fixes this. I think it'll just be life.
Like a good life smack across your goddamn face.
I mean, seriously though, just think about it. Like, just think about something like the Iraq War, for instance, right? Where people know, most people who consider themselves staunchly conservative, they were like, George Bush got that wrong. You know?
That, like, whole lying us into Iraq thing was so hot.
Like, everybody can agree, like, terrible things have to happen first. Like, people have to die. The country has to go into trillions of dollars in debt. Like, these things have to actually happen first for people to see the light on these things. And you're starting to see it with Obamacare.
Right.
Where, like, you have the presidency, you have the House.
Right.
You have the Senate. But you have no, you have no alternative.
Well, I don't know, man. Maybe Dashiki Care is all
right. Right.
I don't know about all that.
Because it's like, wait, what does Paul Ryan want to do now?
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, real life has to happen. And that's a lot of times, unfortunately, for these people. And I feel like this is just most strongly correlated on that side, on the Breitbart side, on the right. Like, they just don't get shit until it happens to them.
What would your grandmother say about it? Gotta get her back.
What would my grandmother say about Breitbart News?
Yeah, what would she say about it? Other than she loves America.
They have a good layout. It's very simple, and the crime, the black crime is bad. It's so bad on Flatbush. It's so bad. The black crime is crazy. It's crazy.
What do you think about them not getting press credentials, Miss?
Well, they have the internet, they have CNN, they have Bannon, they have...
Bannon?
You know, it's so funny.
Bannon.
Bannon is how you say planting in Haitian Creole. So, there you go. Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon. People get mad when I pronounce it planting for some reason.
Planting. Yeah. So Steve Bannon, least popular political figure in America. So there is some hope right there.
I've never whipped out a non, you know, bad white person accent on. So
well, thank you, please for that, Michael. Use it whenever you like. That's what's up. We got to get to what's next. Okay, so now we got to get to what's next. And what's next in some ways is what's up, and what in hopefully might not be what's next, frankly. And this is our old punching bag, Uber. I want to connect a couple of dots here. Uber recently announced, and this is from a report in TheVerge.com, that they're getting very serious about on-demand urban aviation and basically space-based taxis. I'm going to read from The Verge. When Uber first announced its crazy-sounding plan to explore on-demand urban aviation, essentially a network of flying taxis that could be hailed via a smartphone app and flown from rooftop to rooftop, the company made it clear that it never intended to go it alone. Today, it kicked off a three-day Elevate conference in Dallas, Texas. The ride-hail company announced a slew of partnerships with cities, aviation manufacturers, real estate, and electric charging companies in its effort to bring its dream of flying cars closer to reality. And of course, they're also forming partnerships in Dubai. So let's juxtapose this with the ongoing reality of Uber, which for certain areas, such as how it treats its drivers and everything else, there's probably things that implicate the whole app driving industry beyond Uber, right? And they're problematic. But then there's Uber specifically as a brand that is a fucking asshole brand.
Right.
It was out of a line with the protests against the Muslim ban. Travis Kalanick, the CEO, was even caught on video, you know, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, right, exactly.
Or Lex Luthor, excuse me. Lex Luger is the once great WWE champion.
Great guy. And so he was caught on tape berating a driver for Uber. There's been endless stories about sexual harassment at Uber. There's also a new report I know that's being worked on now about the perspective of women Uber drivers who are being sexually harassed. There's all sorts of problems with this company. Travis Kalanick is one of these kind of like man-child CEOs, which is entertaining when it's on a great show like Silicon Valley, but in real life actually kind of belies the problems, the dysfunctions of Silicon Valley and modern capitalism. And just to kind of complete the setting of the table here, in 2015, Apple CEO Tim Cook essentially, and this is according to a report in New York Times, which Mac Observer summarized, it basically Cook called him in, threatened to pull the Uber app off of the Apple Store. So that's interesting because he's basically telling Kalanick to stop being such a jerk and get serious about his role as CEO of Uber, but at the same time it also reveals the power that Apple has with
its
own
closed
garden.
Right, it's like I've got a way bigger dick than you do.
Yeah, I have exactly.
That's and it. I will take it out
and
if I have
will,
to.
And I will take it out if I have to. And they talk about it's just nonstop. This is from Mac Observer. It's just nonstop with Uber. It's one bad story after another, a truly obnoxious personal and corporate behavior. Even while the company burns through cash like nobody's business, and the problem always comes back to Travis Kalanick from The Times. Travis's biggest strength is that he will run through a wall to accomplish his goals, said Mark Cuban, another fucking nuisance. That's not the New York Times, that's me. The Dallas Maverick owner and billionaire investor who's mentored Mr. Kalanick. Travis's biggest weakness is that he will run through walls to accomplish his goal. That's the best way to describe him. And back to Mac Observer, I personally suspect this is going to come back and bite Uber and its corporate butt. Even an enormously valuable corporations have karma. So this is what's happening simultaneously. Uber has changed the whole, taxi driving world. It has bigger plans because the long-term Uber play is not about picking us up. It's about industrial delivery, and that's where the real money is, and driverless cars and everything else. And, they're burning through all of this money and redefining all these categories and have these space ambitions. Meanwhile, they're presided over by a ethical, logistical, organizational, and strategic disaster of a CEO who keeps burning through money and causing so much controversy and being so obnoxious that he's even getting bad press in Silicon Valley, which is enormously indulgent of sociopaths. See Peter Thiel. Wise.
Yeah, it's the same old song with Google, right?
With Uber.
Excuse me, with Uber.
Yeah, but it's all the same shit.
I kind of like Google, honestly.
Yeah, Google. Maybe not as bad.
Yeah, it's
well,
not...
they have worked their way into like use that shit.
Right. When they first came on the scene, the idea was like, oh, you don't even need to hail a cab no more. It's so easy. It's so simple. But realistically, their mission from the start was, no, it's not to do this. It's to eventually replace these drivers who we claim to be empowering and all of this shit. Eventually we want to replace them and have self-driving cars and cars that fly in the air for our overlords so that they never even have to touch the ground and talk to us or deal with us.
Right.
And that seems to be the ethos and the mission statement of the whole company. But, like you guys always mention, that seems to be in line with the ethos of Silicon Valley as a whole.
Right.
So, it's par for the course for Uber. As usual, I wish one day we could come up here and be like, wow, Uber's doing something great for the humanities, for the future.
Right.
No, really, it's a money-making operation, and, they seem to be anti-human,
what was confusing to me about it is that we talk about the contrast in the play of like, okay, we've got... I mean, in Uber's case, they might actually at least be profitable, but they're at this incredibly high valuation. They're burning through all this money. It's not clear how this is going to work out. And then you also have a PR nightmare as CEO, and that still hasn't been corrected. That's a whole other wrinkle, because you would at least think on the level of just like preserving the safety of this investment.
Right.
You'd want to like be like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have an obnoxious guy who has a company with sexual harassment problems with,
you would think that would be mission number one.
You would think it would be mission number one to clean up house to protect all of the resources you're throwing in for these futuristic plays.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like that.
But part of getting all of that investment is that people believe in you.
Right.
And so, part of what got him there is what's going to keep him there. He's the one that's securing this investor money, and they're like, look, this guy's who got Uber to be here. He was good enough to get him here.
Right.
He'll get him the space. if he doesn't kill us all in the meantime.
Yeah, but what do we got to do to restrain? I mean, like, I'm definitely, I'm on delete Uber.
Sure.
In New York, we mostly don't have to deal with these cars to begin with because the subway is still better.
The subway is still fine. Obviously, there's other...
Juno. I mean, Juno gives the drivers more money. Right. That's that big advantage.
Right. And there's competition in the marketplace now, so you don't really need to use Uber, but it's still the number one brand name when it comes to, this automatic taxi cab services. So I don't, you know, I don't
think
know.
It's that ubiquitous where it hit yeah. that point where it's like, it's not as big, obviously, but the way we just say Google is just literally yes. synonymous with
yes,
using internet.
Even when people are using so Lyft, Uber is like, Ubered over here.
Yeah, Ubered over here. Right. That's the problem
yeah.
from a kind of knocking them off positioning point of view.
Yeah. I, you know, eventually I think people will see, I think there'll be other services eventually that come and knock them off of the this particular business that they're thriving in. But who knows? I won't be in the category of people that can buy a flying taxi. So I don't know how dude. We stop them from cornering that market.
It might happen.
But,
we'll be on those flying taxis. It would be Waz and I standing on a rooftop like, we demand more socially responsible flying taxis.
Picketing the rooftops this is not of right. Brooklyn, New York.
Frankly, I want the Juno flying taxi. I would like to not interact with people in a socially responsible way. Thank you. All right, that's what's next. We got to get to the crates. Okay, so now we got to get to the crates. And I'm going to just recommend real quick an essay by Thomas Frank in The Baffler called The Revolution Will Not Be Curated. This is a really interesting piece, basically on just like the idea of curation, how it became trendy and how it affects a particular kind of liberal politics. But this is something to me that also has a lot of relevance for brands. I think the kind of, you know, there's a sense in which being curator is ubiquitous and influences all of our roles, but it's also a oversaturated title, and the kind of faith in it of people playing that role as cultural arbiters and certainly as political arbiters is really overvalued and can kind of disconnect people, if you read it from that Dope Boys perspective, from the margins where some of those kind of more distinct and fresh angles come from. So I would go to The Baffler, Thomas Frank, The Revolution Will Not Be Curated. There's a link to it in the show notes. It's a great article. Brother Waz. See, they thought that we were living in caves.
Oh, they thought.
Meanwhile, we were tied in the finest of silk. While that same devil, his pink flesh was exposed to the sun. He didn't know how to protect himself. And then he came and he stole our sunscreen, which was scented with myrrh and all of the finest biblical oils. And this is who you want to straighten your hair to look like. I say, brothers and sisters, you have been poisoned. Giving you a little Farrakhan to get you going.
Wow, bro. That's amazing. That is amazing. I'm never sure if you're doing Farrakhan or the Prophet Elijah Muhammad.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Elijah's even more like.
Yeah,
he was such a little bitch.
Right,
he's just like a little 5'5". That. Yeah,
I think you're doing
right.
Farrakhan's
a little more Barrett.
Right, and he's a little bit more muscular in
yeah,
some
that's
of his
true.
Delivery.
Like, I said exactly. That they lied to you. If Elijah Muhammad yeah. was just like. If Brother Malcolm keeps taking
exactly.
my shine,
especially if you
I will order
the,
a motherfucking hit squad to Harlem.
If you
now,
watch
where's
the Spike
my
Lee
new
movie,
secretary?
You'll definitely have that vision of the prophet, the honorable
yeah.
prophet
yeah.
Elijah Muhammad.
Peace be upon him. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, but you know what's amazing? It's just from an American perspective. Like, that's an American success story. Like,
facts.
Like, fucking impoverished Georgian sharecropper, like, tiny speech impediment, no physical presence, creates like a multi-million dollar cult
yeah.
and presides over like a
it's
criminal
awesome.
Empire. Yeah, dude.
It's awesome.
American goals.
God bless.
Yeah.
Yeah, God bless the red, white, and blue. Speaking of cultural curation,
yes.
I want to recommend some music. He's a new artist, a new kid that I've been working with. We're actually really close friends, so yeah, obviously what I'm saying is quite biased, but I wouldn't be up here hawking it and shilling for it if I didn't actually believe in this kid's, his product, his integrity as an artist, his abilities, quite frankly, and it's a kid named Jay Hall. It's actually I'm Jay Hall. I am J-A-E-H-A-L-L. That's one word. I'm Jay Hall. You can find his music on Spotify, on Tidal, on SoundCloud, on Apple Music, wherever your local bootlegger is at, you'll be able to find his music. He's got a project coming out called Wish We Felt Nothing. It's basically, it's very modern, I guess. It's hip-hop and R&B infused. There's rapping, there's singing. There's stories of love and loss and flossing and
Drake.
Womanizing. And I mean, you know.
I'm just playing. No, relevant. Dude, I'm ready to see the dude.
Yeah, it's all relevant. It's all relevant. The project is very personal. It's very true to life. Yeah, and all of those hyperbolic statements that artists like to use when they're describing their work, I would actually say applies to this guy's music. So,
like, yeah, man, I mean, it's just me, you know, like every aspect of that is just who I am,
right?
You know,
exactly.
The life that I live,
except for the love part. We ain't loving them. I'm lying. I'm such a softy.
Yeah, you are.
The song I want to recommend, one song in particular, is called Hollywood. It's about, you know, it's about a lot of things. You should listen to it, it's fun.
All right, that's dope. Thank you, man. Thanks for coming in on this.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
Yes.
Obviously, Wise and I always at it, and got more things coming to you soon.
Stay tuned.
Thank super producer Matt Leck. Always Phil McKenzie on the road, my brother in dopeness, and creative director Shauna Wan. Check us out at the Sustainable Brands Conference. Link on the website. We're coming at you in Detroit. End of May info there, including a discount for you. Follow us on all the places, and Twitter and Instagram and all that shit. There's links. See you on Thursday for On Point.